The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 16th chapter. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. The Gospel of the Lord. It was a pretty little church out in the country. Because of its location, the small congregation didn't get many visitors at worship. But one Sunday, a nicely dressed older woman entered the narthex. The usher on duty greeted her warmly, handed her a bulletin, and escorted her into the nave. "Where would you like to be seated?" the usher asked the woman. "The first row, please," she replied enthusiastically. "You know, that's not really a good idea," the usher offered. "Our pastor is a nice guy, but he is incredibly boring. And if you sit right up front, you're going to have to look interested and attentive the whole way through the sermon." "Do you know who I am?" the woman asked rather indignantly. "No," the usher replied, "I don't." "I am the pastor's mother," she said with a bit of a huff. "Do you know who I am?" the usher asked in return. "No," said the woman. "Good, enjoy worship." Identity, who we are. I bet there's a good long list of the ways each of you could identify yourselves. What would your name tag say if all of your titles, relationships, and other descriptors were listed? Son of Susan and Fred, Lebanon Valley College alum, Little League coach, former resident of Maryland, golf fanatic, professor of political science, bad cook, sound sleeper, great-grandparent of four, soup kitchen volunteer, best friend of Sally. Our gospel reading for this morning opens with an identity question from Jesus himself about himself. It's not clear what provokes his questioning of his disciples. Jesus doesn't seem to be one of those guys who does a lot of surveying and polling of public sentiment. But it's certainly a time in his ministry ripe for assessment. Jesus has been quite busy and quite visible. He's been feeding crowds, walking on water, engaging with all sorts of people coming to him for help, such as the Canaanite woman we heard about last week. Jesus continues to heal large groups full of the lame, the maimed, the blind, the mute. And he is in the midst of serious ongoing confrontation with the religious authorities, the Pharisees and Sadducees, about God's commandments, about righteousness, about faith. Now that he's been teaching, preaching, and healing for a while, both among folks who receive him warmly and folks who do not, Jesus wants to know what everybody's thinking. First, Jesus asks about the general perception of him. "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" he asks. As clueless as they are a lot of the time, the disciples actually can answer this question. Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. That's a pretty respectable list of famous Jewish religious figures. These are men who spoke truth to power, named sin, chastised kings, called their communities to repent and return to God, and offered words of hope about the future. But whatever Jesus thought about being added to this roster, he pretty much blows right past the disciples' response to get to what seems to be the real question of the day. "Who do you say that I am?" It's an awfully big question, a loaded question even. Now, we don't know whether the rest of the disciples actually opened their mouths to start to say something, or if they suddenly found their hands or the ceiling really interesting. All we are told is that one of them, Simon Peter, speaks up. Simon Peter, the same guy who was flailing around in the water just a little while ago, the one who was sinking in the waves and crying out for help, who had little faith and more than enough doubt, he offers an amazing answer to Jesus' question. "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Peter does get it right. We hear that from Jesus himself as he affirms the answer. "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. For flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." Now, there are a lot of folks over the ages who have interpreted that last verse to mean that Peter is the foundation of Christ's church. That somehow Peter, the man, the disciple, is who and what this whole 2-millennia-old community of believers is built upon. But Jesus doesn't rejoice with blessing over Peter, a mere mortal. Peter, the man who sinks into the sea, the man who soon will rebuke Jesus, we'll hear that next week, the man whom Jesus will call Satan and a stumbling block, the man who will in the end deny Jesus not once, not twice, but 3 times. No, it's not the flawed, mortal, dense, sinful Peter who is the rock on which the church is built. The rock is the eternal truth which Peter boldly speaks about Jesus. The good news that Jesus is from God, is the Son of God, the one everyone has been hoping for, waiting for, the one with the power to save. "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for the Father in heaven has revealed this to you." After all this rejoicing, What comes next seems kind of odd. After Jesus gives Peter a figurative pat on the head, "Good job, hooray, you have spoken the truth above all truths," Jesus then sternly orders Peter and the rest of the disciples not to tell anyone about any of this. Jesus doesn't want the disciples to talk about him being the Messiah because they simply don't yet understand, can't yet understand what that actually means. Because what being the Messiah actually means for Jesus is suffering and death. And that's not what the Jewish people were looking for, what they were waiting for. The Jewish people were oppressed, subject to the great might and power of the Romans. They expected a deliverer who'd come on the scene with more might, more power. The Messiah would be a winner. He wasn't supposed to die on a cross. And so it won't be until after the disciples actually see that happen. Their Lord and Master arrested and tortured and nailed to a tree and then raised from the dead that they will really understand who Jesus is and what he came to do. The disciples will spend the rest of their lives telling that story, spreading that good news. It will become the foundation of all that they are and say and believe and do. The plans and designs they may have had for their lives before they knew Jesus will change because of him. And thank God for that. It's because of their witness and the witness of generations and generations of disciples after them that more than 2,000 years later, you and I are here. And whatever other identities we may have, however else we might describe ourselves on a name tag, most importantly, we are baptized children of God, gathered in the name of Christ, gathered as his holy church, gathered to be forgiven and blessed and inspired and fed, so that with Peter and the saints across the ages, we too can tell the world who Jesus is. He is our Messiah, the Son of the living God, whose love and mercy is our sure foundation.